Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
First thing that I want to do is show you some photographs. And then I want you just to, when it's just about 5 minutes. And then at the end of that, I want to just ask you a question, okay? So if you'll just look at these for just a moment, and hopefully the PowerPoint will act as it's supposed to. What do you think they are feeling? What do you think they are experiencing, these individuals? What thoughts just popcorn? What thoughts come to your mind as emotions?
Anguish.
Pain. Desperation. Pain.
Fear.
Overwhelmed.
Sad.
Yeah.
Helpless.
Hopeless.
Heartbroken.
That's helpless. It's the face of helplessness. What do I do? How do we get our clients that we see beyond this point? Because what the research shows us is that with military members, is that a small percentage of them actually, back 17%, actually suffer from depression and post-traumatic. Now, believe me, I'm not minimizing that number. It's a significant number, and I'm very sympathetic with that. But what that tells me is that the other 83% are resilient. The other 83% come back to us. And yes, they still have issues that we have to address, but how do we help our clients go from this to that resiliency place? And that's what I want us to focus on. So when you think about resiliency, and I'm going to let you cheat a little bit, but what are words that come into your head? What are thoughts? We went from desperation and hopelessness and helplessness and fearful to what?
Positive coping.
Thank you. What else? Adaptation. What does that mean? That's a term we use in social work all the time. What's it mean?
That's good coping skills.
Finding your strength, your coping skills, using those.
Adjusting to a new environment without too much stress or
work for you. Making those circumstances that you're in work for you. Finding the new norm. Wow.
Finding the new normal.
Because, and is there any right way to do that? Is there any right normal?
No.
We used to call it making a way out of nowhere.
Making a way out of nowhere. Amen. As my grandmother used to say, get blood out of a turnip. You know? just making it happen. Overcoming the odds, bouncing back. The Latin term of resilience actually means, what it literally means is being pliant. That elastic ability, quality of a substance. It doesn't mean it's not stretched. It doesn't mean it's not distorted. It doesn't mean it's not banged and beat up and misshaped. But what it means is that it comes back. And think about the clients that you work with. Okay? Here's a couple of definitions from the literature. These are in your PowerPoint. Not going to read through all of them, but the second one, what I love about that definition is it addresses what? All levels, system levels that we work with. We often think about resiliency only addressing individuals or families. But you think about communities. We're from Mississippi. Katrina hit us 10 years ago. Hit us hard. We were the epicenter. The media didn't show that. The media showed New Orleans, and I'm not minimizing what New Orleans went through, but Katrina came landfall on the Gulf Coast of Biloxi, Mississippi, in Gulfport. It was wiped out. Okay? That community, if you go down there today, there's still some evidence, but as a whole, oh my goodness, they came back and were resilient and supported each other. I love that definition for that reason. So a little historical context on the research of resiliency. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because I want to move on. But the initial focus for resiliency really focused on disadvantaged children. In the early 60s and 70s, it was how do children coming from these very difficult situations manage to grow up as adults and survive? How were they doing that? That was how were they not all suffering in prison somewhere? How is that happening? And that's where the majority of the research really focused in the early 60s, 70s, and 80s. What I think is interesting is that Bernard in 1993 found that between one half and two thirds of children growing up in adverse situations do overcome the odds and do cope effectively. Adaptation. Second focus really shifted gears a little bit and looked at people across the lifespan. And not just at children, but people as middle adults, people as young adults, the elderly. How are we coping? How are we bouncing back at different stages in our life? And I love this. Subjective meanings are critical determinants of success. What does that mean? Subjective meanings are critical determinants of success. What do you think that means? Come on, somebody talk to me. How do you interpret your situation? Is the glass half full or the glass half empty? It's perception. Do you think that helps people to be resilient? Is that something that we maybe need to be teaching with our folks that we work with in social work? Okay, the resiliency theory and resiliency work really looks at two factors. You have risk factors and protective factors, where all the resiliency work comes from. I break them here for you, and again, I'm not going to read the PowerPoint. I loved Dr. Parker's presentation at lunch because he'd been military based and not working with me. He's exactly right. If you read from the PowerPoint, they get you. So I'm going to try to just talk you through this. But guys, risk factors. Individuals, peers, families, schools, community, and society. I want to give you a handout. Here it is. Thank you. And I don't know if I'm going to have enough, but you'll take those and just take one and pass. I meant to include this in the PowerPoint, but I failed to get it in there, so I apologize. But guys, what this handout shows you is in family systems, in community, how risk factors in a family impact our individuals, but it impacts at all levels. And at all levels, we need, as we are working with individuals, families, and communities, we need to be identifying what are those risk factors or what are those protective factors. Risk factors, what do we mean by that? Anybody know? Well, how's that defined?
These are going to be like pre-event factors. So what is going on for them in their life before they have something traumatic happen?
Exactly. What puts them at risk? What can be some risk factors? And there's some examples here on your handout. What can be some risk factors for individuals?
Trauma.
Unemployment. Addiction. Isolation. Poverty. Illnesses. Death. A disability, unexpected disability.
Lack of social support, I'm not sure.
Lack of social support. These are all risk factors that we assess, okay? What are those protective factors?
If they have healthy coping skills.
What do they do? What is the reason that they are still sitting there in front of you? What is it that has gotten them to the place that they walked in your office or picked up the phone and called and asked for help? What is that coping skill? What is that protective factor? Can it be spirituality?
Yes.
You bet it can. Can it be family members? You bet it can. Can it be financial resources? All of these systems, it could be the church, all of these protective factors that we are to look at and assess at each one of these levels. Okay, so quick question here. Is resiliency the same thing as recovery? What's the difference? You're right. It's not the same.
Resiliency carries on. It's ongoing. It's maintaining that renewal. Recovery is the point.
Yeah, it's exactly. Recovery, the normal function temporarily gives way. Key term there, temporarily gives way to a threshold of psychopathology for a period of at least several months and gradually returns to the pre-event. Resiliency is the ability to maintain a stable equilibrium. Okay? I give you on your handout there a chart. And if you look, here's resiliency. Here's your traumatic event. Okay? Point of traumatic event is right here. Look at the resiliency. Okay, my functioning drops. It goes from considered normal for me. My disruption in normal behavior. But then I maintain. Okay? Recovery. What happens here? Wow. I just keep dropping. Okay? There's a definite difference. And resiliency, and the reason I point this out and the reason I leave these slides in is because, unfortunately, sometimes people get the terms confused and think about resiliency and recovery as the same thing. But guys, resiliency is a continuum. It's a journey. It's a journey. And if you don't leave out of here with anything else, know that. It's not a point of return. It's a journey. It's a process. So when bad things happen, the people, if you work on a treatment team, if you work in a clinical setting, unfortunately, we tend to focus on the pathology of the individual or the family, don't we? That's what we tend to focus on. They're depressed. They are dealing with, you know, whatever. Those things need to be addressed. But as I mentioned to you earlier, chronic grief and depression, and these are numbers from the military-based numbers because, and it's studies from soldiers and airmen that have returned after serving in Iraqi freedom. 10-15% for chronic grief and depression. Chronic being the term there, okay? PTSD, 5-10%. Again, those are important numbers. I'm not minimizing that. But it tells me that there's a lot of people that are doing well. Demonstrated by what? Resiliency. Demonstrated by optimism, flexibility. Get through here. My PowerPoint's not going as quickly as I need it to. Self-confidence, competence, insightfulness, perseverance, perspective, and self-control. I don't know if you can see that. It's on your handout. But when you think about, I think about systems. It's what we do, right? And resiliency is impacted by systems in our lives and in our individuals' lives and our families' lives. So when you're working with an individual, with a family, with a community, it's important to assess from a systems level what are the systems in their life that provide, that are risk factors are protective factors that help contribute to resiliency. So, is there safety in their living environment? If there is, it's a risk. It's a protective factor. If not, it's a risk factor. Do they have a sense of belonging and connectedness? Whether with their family, with peers, with their church, does that exist? What's their level of self-efficacy? How do they feel about themselves and their ability to sustain? Do they have a positive self-image? Excuse me. Are they able to sustain positive interpersonal relationships? Are they able to sustain positive interpersonal relationships? Why is that important for resiliency? Somebody talk to me. So I'm going to drink a Coke because I'm losing my voice.
Well, perceived social support, which was studied a lot in the 1980s, has been found to be critical in these areas. And the interesting thing is it's not that everyone can give social support effectively, but everyone needs
social support. Exactly. Not everybody can give that, but every one of us. God created us in community, didn't he?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading right now one of Dietrich Bonhoeffer's writings, and it's all about community. I know. I got many awes in the audience.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And it's Living Together. It's a little book about that thick. And it's all about community. And he talks about we are to provide community. And I think about how that, and as I was reading that and preparing for this, I thought, how does that help us be resilient? How does that help our clients be resilient? One of my clients I'm working with right now is a pastor's wife in a very small town in Mississippi. Guys, she has no other support system because she has to maintain the image, right, of a pastor's wife in small town Mississippi where everybody knows her business, everybody knows everything. And she has to maintain this image of, I'm resilient, I can handle anything. Well, so she calls me, okay? I'm her support system because she's got no family connection. She comes from an extremely dysfunctional family. They're not a support. They don't even want her married to and being a pastor's wife. So I'm that support system. Guys, many times we are it when we're working with our clients. We are the only support system that they may have that help them with that resiliency. And we have to provide that when we need to. Are they able to manage their emotions and regain an equilibrium when they're upset? Woo, that's a loaded one. Sometimes I can't do that, you know? Are they able to maintain their emotions and regain their equilibrium when they're upset? Sometimes that's a difficult one that we have to teach our clients. Okay, are you on the scale of 1 to 10 today? Right? I'm angry. Scale of 1 to 10. So how do we get back to a 5 here? Okay? Or back to a 2, or back to a 1. Very basic things. But guys, what that teaches them is that resiliency. It teaches them to come back. What can you do to get through this? What can you do? We don't want to hit anybody. That's not good. We don't want to go in and cuss out our boss. That's not a positive way to cope. Okay? So teaching them those coping skills that are positive, protective factors that help them to learn to be resilient. Okay. Does everyone possess resiliency? What do y'all think?
Yeah.
The literature tells us that it is ordinary, not extraordinary. It is ordinary, not extraordinary. Meaning that we have it. The folks that we see, they have it. We just have to many times help them recognize that they have those abilities. And many times it's with a simple statement of, like I said earlier, you're sitting in my office today, you haven't given up. You are oh my goodness, you're 35 years old and you've raised four kids on your own and you're working two jobs. That tells me you haven't given up. And so many times it's helping them to recognize that they are doing better than what they think they're doing. It's that perception. It's that shift. It is tremendously influenced by a person's environment. And that environment is what? Family, support systems, community. It's all those systems that we talk about. Now, so you have two people brought up in the same environment. I think about my mom. She's 81 years old, probably one of the most resilient people I've ever known. When I was 3 years old, she left an abusive husband, an alcoholic father, moved out with a 12-year-old boy and a 3-year-old daughter, and pretty much, I mean, we were just out there. At that time, that was in the early 1970s, divorce, you didn't even say the word in the Deep South, especially in a Baptist home, very religious home. And you certainly didn't leave your husband. And she did both of those for the sake of her children and herself. Mm-hmm. And she worked, and thank goodness she had a good education, so she had a good job to provide that for her. And she had some means to provide for us, but she went through a lot. Because just because she left didn't mean he still didn't know where she was and where we were. And just because she left didn't mean that the church didn't go, well, you might as well have a big old A hanging around your neck. The church. And just because she left didn't mean that her friends and her family didn't pretty much go, well, what did you do that for? You know? We don't divorce. What are you talking about? So my 81-year-old mom, who is absolutely one of the most resilient little 4'11", 100-pound women you will ever want to meet. And then her sister, who is 85 now. And her sister, who up until about 10 years ago, when her husband died, didn't even know how to put gas in her own car. Seriously. Up until 10 years ago, when her husband died, she had never written a check. She called me when her husband died and said, I need you to come show me how to pay bills, because I've never had to do that. She, at the very least little thing, falls apart emotionally. I'm talking little things, okay? The ice maker freezing up in the refrigerator. She had a nervous breakdown, you know? My mom's going, get the hair dryer, stick it in there, it off, it'll be fine. Sure enough, it worked. They grew up in the very same environment. They grew up with the same belief systems. They grew up in the same community. But at a point in their life trajectories changed drastically. Even though they grew up very much the same, in about their 30s, they took very different paths. And my mom had a choice of either bouncing back or giving up. And she chose to bounce back. And I've used the demonstration many times of two people standing together, pushing on each other and supporting each other. Well, guess what? She stood and she supported us. Her sister never had to face that adversity. So 40 years later, where my mom's going, just get the hair dryer, it's no big deal. She falls apart. And so even though being brought up and tremendously influenced by a person, we tend to think about that as children. Resiliency is a journey. It is a process. It is a process. Factors influencing resiliency. People struggle with social skills, poor problem solving. If they are dealing with have death or loss, and we talked about, we named some of these. These are all things that make a person vulnerable, but it doesn't mean that they can't demonstrate resiliency. Makes them vulnerable, okay? But they're at that place of, am I going to demonstrate resiliency or not? And then, just the opposite of that. If they possess these factors, then it's easier for them to demonstrate resiliency. So, facilitators of resilience, we've talked about some of these. I've got these on your handout. Yes, ma'am.
You know, on that previous slide,
yes.
The factors of resiliency,
yeah.
Nowhere on there is anything that delineates what was the difference between your mother and your aunt, which is having
yeah.
gone through the depths of whatever trials, afflictions, tribulations, and having success.
The vulnerability, under vulnerabilities, there was abuse and death of a spouse, and my mom experienced both of those very early on, which made her very vulnerable. And like I said, it doesn't mean that you don't become resilient. It makes you very vulnerable.
But I'm talking about the other side of it, the factors for resiliency, the factors
yeah.
that make you resilient. Never was any of those a category where I related to the story about the difference between your mom and your aunt, which is having gone through adversity, affliction, and trials
right.
and suffering, having success.
Yeah, the adversity makes you stronger. The
What does
it's
kill
both
you?
Of those.
What
it's
does
both
it?
Of those
yeah.
together.
Yeah. I mean, there was a phrase that somebody used with me when I was going through a trial. It says, what, Amy Lynn, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Absolutely. It's both of
and
those.
And that needs to go on there somehow. There's nothing in there that says, gives you credit for success in the past.
And I think it's I think it was probably how I framed that. Because what I meant with that first slide is, all of those things can make you resilient. Okay? They are what we term negative factors in life. They're hard experiences, they're adversity. But again, it's our choice as to whether or not we're resilient to them.
So all of those things.
All of those things. The other experiences also contribute to our resiliency. So if my aunt had that experience of, really not facing adversity until later in life. Her husband died 10 years ago, and she is now having to become resilient. Unfortunately, at 85. But now, I've seen her grow in 10 years. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really exciting. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Guys, this is just real quick. I got this from the military. They allowed me to use this. It was also published, the source is the U.S. Army. It's also published in USA Today. And I'm running out of time here, I'm sorry. What's interesting about this, these are numbers for non-active duty National Guard soldiers 2009 to 2010. Sorry, showing my age there. 2009 to 2010. These are figures of completed suicides. Okay, of soldiers that after they returned home. Non-active duty, 48 to 86, but they were National Guard members. Active duty, 140 to 132. What's the difference? One went up, almost doubled. Other went down. Not significantly, but it went down. There's still a huge range. What was the difference, do you think? Lack of community. These National Guard members, guys, many times they live out in Mississippi, I know, they live out in rural, hot coffee Mississippi, and there is not another National Guard member maybe within 25 miles of them. for them to talk to, for them to express, this is what I went through. Hey, you're my battle buddy. You can understand my language. You're my support system. To help them through that process of being resilient. They didn't have the support system. The community, 140 to 132, and that drop there, the military believed it was that sense of community. That is a huge difference. So there's a lot of work that's been done, being done with National Guard members to help build community with them and make them feel more. Okay, resilience-based practice. As we are working with our families, with our communities, with our individuals, it's important that we focus on their strengths and their self-protective behavior. And that social work, isn't that what we are supposed to do? But we forget that sometimes, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
When you've been practicing as long as I have, sometimes I forget and I start focusing on the problems instead of on the strengths of that individual. One of the most, according to the research, one of the most valuable techniques of building resiliency with our clients is allowing them to tell their story. One of the most valid pieces of research that showed this was a longitudinal piece of research with Holocaust survivors. And those Holocaust survivors were children during World War II. They were airlifted out of Germany, dropped in the UK. They were placed in, there were 133 of them, placed in a foster home. In this foster home, they had therapeutic social worker-type house parents slash counselors. When they first arrived at that home, they were, of course, very quiet, very scared, very disgruntled. I mean, you know, they had all those emotions that we labeled first early on. Very detached, very much not trusting. And over a period, this longitudinal study showed that over a period of these therapeutic house parents building relationship, allowing them to tell their story. They said, you know what? They were still sad. They still missed their parents. They still missed their community. But there was also that story of hope and survival. And I made it through this. And I will make it through this. And so you had both elements. And that, I think, is so important. What's really interesting is this piece of research follows that same group of children into adulthood. And I've got the list, the research on my list here for you. And as adults, they still talked about, we miss our parents, because many of them never saw their parents again, even after the war. You know, we miss that family connection, our cultural roots for many of them. But we are productive adults. We have our own families. We're survivors. And it kind of goes back to what Dr. Parker talked about at lunch, if y'all were able to sit in on his lecture. But listening to the story, listening to the narrative, and focusing on allowing our clients to tell their story and focusing on the strengths that they have through that story. Research tells us that that has been one of the most therapeutic ways of helping our clients recognize their resiliency. Yes.
So along with that, one of the biggest pieces we've worked on resiliency model is that when you develop treatment plans for folks, the history of it has been, okay, the providers all sit down, put it in front of the consumer
and tell them the sign.
Say, here is your treatment plan. This is what you are going to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You're going to get buy-in on that.
Right.
What happens is this approach says, what do you think you need to work on?
Exactly.
So it's part of Now, you're still working with professionals who are going to help you.
That's right.
And make it, centered.
Therapeutic.
But
yes.
At the same time, it's them identifying their needs,
exactly.
Which is part of the telling the story,
yes.
Which is part of the solution focused piece.
Yes.
Which is because you think of it, the job of a therapist is not to give you the answer.
Right.
It's to get you to the point where you come up with the answer yourself.
It's taking you on the journey.
And you allow the individual to say, this is what I think I need help with, then you're
exactly.
going to get a whole lot more buy-in.
Exactly.
And a whole lot more success.
And you also might get something you didn't think
of. And isn't it amazing how much we learn just if we shut up and listen to our clients, you know? And it helps them to focus. And it helps us to focus on what we should be focused on, which is hopefully solutions and not problems. And then the trauma is not always predicted. It may weaken or it may strengthen the individual, which goes back to what we talked about earlier. So just some real practical things. And guys, I borrowed this. Again, the military allowed me to borrow some of this information. This is just real practical stuff, guys. But it's holistic, and it is a journey. Resiliency is not a one-time event. There are days that I'm a lot more resilient than other days, you know? There are some days that I had one of those days about 2 weeks ago where everything that possibly could go wrong, from getting a speeding ticket, trying to get to work, to... I mean, it's like everything that could go wrong did, just about, to my car not cranking, it was just one of those days. I walked into a store on my way home, and the lady goes, you've had a really bad day. Is that obvious? You know? Guys, there are some of those days that you're more resilient than others, and so it is a process. But we don't need to wait, and we need to instill in our clients that they don't need to wait till trauma happens, till crisis happens, to then put all these things into effect. And that's what the military finally figured out with our soldiers is, you know what, if we're going to help them adjust down here, we got to help them back here. And that's what they finally figured out is it's a journey. It's a process. Okay? So, real practical things here. Manage physical fitness, eating well, getting enough rest, and then the E word that we all hate, or I do anyway. And then, of course, mental fitness. I love that one. Accepting that change is a part of life. Accepting that change is a part of life. That's huge, guys. And sometimes, a friend of mine used to say, it is what it is. And sometimes we just have to remind ourselves of that and our clients of that. Taking action, helping our clients, helping ourselves to make change in the areas that we can make change in. If we can't control it, we can't control it. We got to let that go. If they can't control it, they got to learn to let that go. But to be resilient and empowering them to make that change in the areas that they can to take. Social fitness, of course, I'll have in large letters there, avoiding isolation. Avoiding isolation. Why do I have that in large letters?
Because we're social workers.
Because we're social workers, exactly. What are we going to say, Dad?
Nothing worse than being depressed and just hanging out with yourself. Because when you do that, you just feel.
Yeah.
And it becomes worse than it is.
Yeah. Kind of the it's my party and I'll cry if I want to. You know? That's really the worst thing that we can do to instill resiliency is to stay isolated, but it's also the worst thing that our clients can do, definitely. And, you know, a little rational motive stuff, cognitive behavior, whatever. If you don't feel like it, it doesn't matter. You just do it anyway, right? You can't go by your feelings. If you don't feel like it, you do it anyway.
And I think the other significance of those large letters is that everything looks worse and bigger.
It's exactly right.
It's
exactly right. And then I couldn't leave this without some spiritual fitness. guys, there's over 25 years of valid research that tells us that there's a strong association between religious practices, community within a church community, and mental health. Church burnings in Africa. Communities come back and they rebuild those churches. Tornadoes coming through, wiping out churches and communities in Mississippi, Alabama, Oklahoma. What do? It happens on a Saturday night at midnight, Sunday the next day, they're sitting out there where the church was, having church. Right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's strong association there. There is a strong association. When our clients identify that that is part of their resiliency and part of their strength, we, by golly, need to recognize that and use that. And really tap into that. And ask them to tell their story. How did spirituality become so important to you? And then use that to tap into that. That's what we're going to do today. That's how we're going to build on today. And move forward with that.
And Everett Worthington's research at the Virginia Commonwealth, he's done, you know, making that analysis of a lot of his research.
That's right.
But it's not even really as important what the integration is as the fact that it's done.
Exactly. Just how many, I mean, don't we love to just have something that we value, valued by others? You know? So if our clients say to us that spirituality is important to them, we need to value that with them. And then I put some scripture here just to support that. Think about Job and his resiliency. I think about many of the other New Testament, of course, folks and resiliency and endurance. And then my last picture for you here. This is called the Friendship Oak. It is over 500 years old. It exists in Gulfport, Mississippi. It is on the campus of University of Southern Mississippi there. It has survived Camille. Some of you are old enough to remember Camille. And we thought at that time that we'd never see anything else like Camille to hit the Gulf Coast. And then along came Katrina. Well, the Friendship Oak survived both of those. And this was taken immediately after Katrina. If you look right here, this is a deck off, I mean, a front porch off of a building that sat, well, they're not really sure where the building sat. Because it just showed up in the tree. There was debris all in the tree. Okay? What I love, though, is that this is taken today, or recently. And the foresters tell us that since Katrina, 10 years ago, that the oak has actually grown another foot in diameter and several feet tall, which is a lot for a live oak. And that it's as strong as it's ever been. But if you look closely, you will see the damage from Katrina by stuff landing in her, by, you know, the bark is still, there's still scars there. And I think that's a beautiful picture of resiliency. We have the scars. It doesn't mean we don't hurt. It doesn't mean we're not sad. It doesn't mean that we are sometimes broken. But it means we're still standing. By the way, the reason they call it a friendship oath is they say that if you stand under the boughs of her, and this is not shot with a wide angle. The boughs actually come out like way out here and to the other side. But they say if you stand underneath her in her shadow, that friendship will endure a lifetime. So if you're ever on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, I encourage you to go by and get a picture made under the friendship oath.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.